This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here today. This is WNRN and the Sunday morning wake-up call. This is one of those shows that we're going to change it up just a little bit. Our regular guest that's usually here once a year, Jim Duncan, Nest Realty. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. The excitement of having this new computer system on here is completely got me wired up and ready to go. Thanks to Rusty Simpre and Melissa Goode for getting me all worked up. Jim Duncan here. You're regularly on. You are a realtor.
I am.
Nest Realty. That's your gig. And usually once a year or so, you come on, you talk about how great or average or improving the realty market is. You never say how bad the market is. And
I say how it is.
And how that is doing in terms of sales. But today we're gonna change it up a little bit. It's not going to be just about home sales and what's going on. It's going to be a little bit more about the community and what makes a community and what inspires people to move to this community or improve their relationships within the community. So, Jim Duncan, Rick Moore, talking about community here on WNRN. So, Jim, again, Jim Duncan, Nest Realty, you can find his blog, which I find to be really interesting. You can find it at realcentralva.com. Why'd you pick that name, by the way?
It was almost 10 years ago that I started it, and I started, I wanted a combination of Central Virginia and realty, and it evolved from there. And also back then, trying to figure out the limited domain names that were left. And I was able to capture that for Real Central VA and Real Crozet VA, which I started later.
And you can always go on www, if you still need that, realcentralva.com, regular blog articles. And we're going to jump right in and talk about one of those recent articles in there, which had to do with what makes a good neighborhood.
I think it depends. I mean, as I've been doing the show for long enough that one of my answers that I start with all the time is that it depends. I mean, it depends on what you're looking for. In my world, I'd say that one of the things that my clients have come to me more often in the last 3 to 5 years, I would say, is that they want to be part of something. You know, they want to be part of a neighborhood. They want to be part of a community. They want to be, interacting with their neighbors. But not so much that they see them every day and they're part of their business, but they know what's happening in their respective lives, and they want to feel comfortable when they come home and they can send their kids outside if they have kids, and they feel comfortable with that. So it's really a combination of things. But I think it's also part of a good neighborhood is where that neighborhood is located with respect to proximity to things that they're looking to do.
You talk about, the neighborhood is important, but there's also conversation about how do you meet your neighbors? Because you live in Crozet, correct?
Mm-hmm, I do.
And for many people who've lived here for any length of time, Crozet has grown quite a bit. It's become much more of a suburban area itself with mm-hmm. little neighborhoods, with living areas. You turn down one street and there's, Oak Street and Pine Street and, or whatever, as opposed to just being its own little bedroom homes for everyone going into Charlottesville. And the homes themselves have been on the main streets for 30, 40, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, as whether you are new to the area or new purchasing a home in that area, what are your suggestions as a realtor to walk next door and meet that person, to invite them into the area or get yourself invited into the area?
I think you have to be an outgoing person. I mean, that's an interesting question, and it makes me think back to when I was a, a little kid. I grew up in Culpeper on a big farm. And I remember during a snowstorm, a neighbor from about a mile and a half away, which was one of our closest neighbors, knocked on our door with her kids and said, "Hey, we're new to the area. We thought this would be a great time to come and meet our neighbors." And they became really close family friends after that. And I think that's the same thing in any neighborhood you're in today. I mean, if you want to meet your neighbors, you know, knock on their door and get to know them and seek them out. And another thing is, you know, years ago, one of our neighbors, we live in a small, you know, neighborhood in Crozet, and we didn't know them that well. And then one day we saw an ambulance next door, and we probably interacted with them 3 to 4 times, and they had a little girl that was the same age as ours, probably 18 months at a time. And we saw that they were in distress, and we went over and said, "Go to the hospital. We're going to take your daughter." And they just looked at us and said, "Okay." And from then on, again, we were close friends. So I mean, I think it's a matter of seeking opportunities to meet people once you're in that neighborhood. But I think a lot of things that my clients, when they're moving to the area that they don't know, and it's really difficult to find out, is what kind of a neighborhood is that? And so now I advise them, if they can, you know, walk their dog in the neighborhood ahead of time, walk their kids, borrow a dog or a cat and walk that. You know, get out there and smile at people and see if they wave. And, you know, you have a lot of private Facebook pages and private discussion groups through nextdoor.com and things like that, that people are, more of my clients are seeking that stuff out with or without my guidance. And they're really trying to figure out what is it you're going to be. You know, it's one thing to drive through and see the house for 20 minutes while you're showing it one day. But a lot of my clients are spending a lot more time investigating the neighborhoods, and I've termed it the gestation period for my time with a buyer client. It's oftentimes just 3 months to 18 to 36 months. And so when they have the luxury of having more time, they spend a lot of time in that neighborhood, in the local coffee shop, you know, going to the grocery store and figuring out what it's like to live there. And I think that when you're buying a home, I mean, you're not buying it for a 1 to 4 year time frame. You're buying it for, you know, 5 to 10 to 20 years more often. And you really need to spend that time educating yourself on the neighborhood, what you're close to, and what that community is, and whether you really want to be there in 3 to 5 to 10 years.
But not everybody is an outgoing person. And that was pretty much what you said at the start of that answer, was you need to be an outgoing person. If you are not an outgoing person, do you suggest that has its own parameters for where you might choose to live? You don't choose to live in the sort of, you know, visually standard suburban area where there's no trees separating the homes, and you see all the men outside on Saturday morning cutting their grass at the same time, sort of thing, like you would see on a TV show. Does that, if you're much more quiet and internally reflective, mm-hmm. do you take out those places as possibilities to live?
No, I mean, I think if you want to have a quieter lifestyle, there's nothing that obligates you to go out and meet your neighbors. I mean, if you want to be part of a community, I'd say that the online aspect has really shifted things in the last 5 to 10 years, because you have neighborhood groups where you can know what your neighbors are doing, you can stay on top of neighborhood news. But if you want to go to your home and that's where you stay, you know, I think that I'd say that almost any neighborhood in the Charlottesville area will be accommodating for that as well.
Rick Moore here, Sunday morning wake up call on WNRN. Our guest today, Jim Duncan, Nest Realty. We're talking about realty a little bit, but we're trying to communicate about the community aspects of Central Virginia. And for those who are living here now, those who are considering about moving to a different area of our community. And Jim, let's give you some props. Nest Realty, but you've also received national awards, correct?
We have.
Not just Nest Realty, but Jim Duncan has received national awards.
I've a couple for, you know, there's a real estate publication, Inman News, that over the years I've gotten cited as various top bloggers in the country or most influential or something like that.
So we only bring on the best guests.
Well, there you go.
So Jim Duncan, Nest Realty. You can find his blog at realcentralva.com. Jim, you went on your Facebook page.
Yeah.
and told people, hey, I'm coming on the show. What are some things you want us to talk about? So here are some of the topics that came up. Let's from Lonnie. What will be or is the impact on the Charlottesville Albemarle economy as the aging baby boomer population moves from homes to apartments to retirement communities and assisted living over the next 10 years?
It's a fascinating question and answer. I spent some time researching that before I came on, and I've actually written about that a number of times over the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, it's really fascinating. As I wrote, I think, in 2009, when I first started seeing this and seeing it noted by other publications, you know, I think that as Charlottesville Albemarle, I still think are fairly safe from what may be coming because it's a relatively small community geographically wise. But I think that as you see aging baby boomers choosing a lifestyle shift, which is not just shared by the baby boomers. I mean, this is a lot of millennials and you know every other generational group. They want to live in a home and not necessarily mow the grass on every Saturday morning and not necessarily change the windows and do that home ownership stuff that comes along with being responsible for your domain. But I think that with the baby boomers, you're seeing some of the stuff in Charlottesville and the urban ring are catering to that. I mean, you're having more first floor masters. You're having more condo type amenities as far as the association managing the exterior maintenance of the home. And I think that that's going to be an interesting shift because to more of that product being on the market. But what has been seen in other communities around the country is that during the boom years before we had the massive correction that we experienced, you had a lot of these exurbs were grown, massive tracts of land were developed with cookie cutter homes that were just thrown up seemingly overnight.
And Dunlora.
Dunlora's in the urban ring. Dunlora's one of the finest neighborhoods as far as the location, really and truly along that entire Rio corridor is close enough for most people. And it's in with Dunlora specifically, it's got nearly half acre lots for most of the single family homes in there. But you also have an attached product in there also, and you have Dunlora Forest that's right along Rio Road. So I mean, I think that Dunlora, like that stretch, and there's one of the questions in there that Gary asked was where are the new neighborhoods that are coming? I mean, Dunlora is just it's going to be the older venerable community along Rio. You've got Belvedere and Lachlan Hill, and you've got Stonewater across the street, and you have a whole slew of homes coming in right along there. But you have places, I think, that out in Lake Monticello, they're becoming more self-sufficient, which is 30 minutes or so away from downtown Charlottesville.
So for Lonnie's question about what happens or what will be happening and the impact on the Charlottesville Albemarle economy, do you envision that there will be more people moving from, I don't know, I can say Crozet, but certainly the real estate thing is not my issue. Moving from Crozet and closer into Charlottesville, Albemarle, into the Dunlora spaces?
I think so. I mean, I think you're going to see, not just in our locality, but everywhere. You're going to see people moving from, Standardsville and Rutgersville into downtown Charlottesville-ish, into the city center and the urban ring. And I would include Crozet in that urban ring, too, just because of its relative close proximity. But they're going to be moving from those single-family home communities, 35, 45 minutes out, to be closer to stuff, as I term it. Stuff being, libraries.
Scottsville, Zion's Crossroads, they move closer to Charlottesville, assuming that's their work area?
Yeah, I think so. And I think with Zion Crossroads also, you look at, they're becoming a more dynamic community. You're having a lot of growth out there that's becoming more self-sustaining and self-sufficient. So those people are going to have less reason to come to Charlottesville unless they want to come to Charlottesville. I think that what you're seeing in the outlying areas, like with Rutgersville, with the relatively new Walmart and Lowe's, there's less reason for people to come to Charlottesville for that stuff. And so I think what you're going to see, in 20 years is there, in other, again, I look at national stuff and I trend it locally. In other communities, the threat is that you're going to have tracts of land with old, deteriorating, cheaply built homes that are just become zombie wastelands of homes with one or two people left standing there. as these homes just sit there and eat themselves. And yeah, I think that you're going to see that to a much lesser degree in our area. But I think that you are absolutely seeing a trend of people who are choosing to live closer into the city urban ring because they, you know, Charlottesville, for better or worse, is, you know, it's something that people want to be. They want to be here so that they are, so their 45-minute commute somewhere else is 15 to 17 minutes here. So I think it's really a reflection on what people want and what their priorities are.
11:16 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Jim Duncan from Ness Realty, as we talk about community and the effects that we're having now, then, and in the future. This is 91.9 and Harrisonburg's 95.1.
Today's programming on WNRN is supported by
The Markets of Tiger Fuel Company, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street.
Willow Tree Apps, creators of WNRN's apps for Android and iPhone. Willow Tree is looking for developers to join their Charlottesville team. You can enjoy the perks of working for an award-winning mobile agency in a team environment. To learn more, it's willowtreeapps.com/jobs.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us. This is WNRN. And Rick Moore, Jim Duncan, you're welcome to call. If you have a question for Jim, fire away, 434-979-0919. That's 434-979-0919 if you have a question for Mr. Duncan. So, Jim, we were talking about the impact as the baby boomer population ages, and but that was another question that that came up in preparation for the show is, America is rapidly aging and a country built for the young. Multi-story single-family homes with master bedrooms on the second floor. The lawn requires regular upkeep. Neighborhoods are in places that require a driver's license to do your home to do your errands. So it's just a step aside from what we were talking about. What is happening in terms of that? Are you rebuilding? And a perfect example is my parents. Early 70s, still very healthy, but several years ago, 5-7 years ago, they redid part of the home, the master bedroom on the third floor, and the kids whispered back and forth to each other, why didn't they put a master bedroom on the ground floor? Not done. So, you know, how do you, what do you think that this plays into the sales of homes in the future?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm seeing that my clients, even the ones who are, you know, early 30s, are looking at being in a home for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. And so they are, you know, having that expectation of aging in that home and needing to have a master, at least the capability of a master on the main level. So I think it. What we're seeing right now is a resurgence of that product type in our market, where you are having people who are having the first floor master or even two first floor masters, because it's, sometimes it's
right, because you need the mother-in-law room or something of that sort.
Exactly,
right? the room with its own separate entrance, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, you're starting to see people are, you know, the one of the challenges is that the life cycle of saying, oh, okay, well, here's a trend. How do we respond to this trend, and how do we change our product type that we've already had in the works for, you know, 1 to 5 years? Changing that product type is sometimes challenging. So I think that what you're going to see is, as the homes in the Charlottesville area, both the existing, you know, the ones that are built in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, and up, you're going to have people who are going to go in, and the house is going to be $400,000, but it's going to be functionally obsolete. $300,000 or whatever that number is, and it's going to need, you know, $20,000 to $60,000 worth of renovations minimum. And I think that what you may see is that that product type gets, you know, devalued because it's no longer, you know, it's no longer as marketable as it may have been 20 years prior. So I think that there's an opportunity there, and you've seen a couple firms locally and nationally are really taking advantage of going in and retrofitting new homes to be more universal design, meaning the, you know, the wide hallways, the on-grade entrances, you know, the no-step entries, living spaces on the ground floor, that sort of thing. There's an opportunity there to retrofit these houses, but the, you know, the challenge is with most things in our country is that, you know, it's not going to be cheap. And so I think it's going to be something that in time is going to be slowly but surely, you know, accomplished, but there's no full, you know, no easy way to say, okay, let's make all these houses work for an aging population.
Has you mentioned that they are becoming obsolete,
mm-hmm,
in some way? I'm assuming that it's not 100%, but certainly a noticeable percentage. Do you just have people say, I can't take that, no, that won't work for us? Or is there discussion about having the, does Nest Realty speak to the sellers about, you should consider doing this before you put it on the market?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's, yeah, I don't think that we're at that critical time as of yet where we're going to say, okay, you need to widen the doorways to speak to this, you know, this wider market segment. But we absolutely do go in and help counsel the sellers as far as, you know, here are these things that may be objections that we're going to deal with. And if we, you know, I think you may want to do these two things, you know, paint, clean, whatever, ahead of time. And this may be an objection. And if we hear from three different realtors giving feedback that this is an option that should be fixed, we might want to go ahead and fix that. But you also look at things like, you know, things that can't be fixed. You know, there are just sometimes things that, you know, most houses, you just can't put a master, you know, on a first floor. And it just can't be done on a lot of these houses. Or a yard is too steep and, you know, family wants a flat yard. There are some things that just, it is what it is, and you just deal with it through the market.
979-0919 if you have a question for Jim Duncan. It's 1123 here on the Wake Up Call. Jim Duncan with Nest Realty. You can also find his blog at realcentralva.com. So, Jim, here's another question that came from Kim. Who are the local first-time buyers? What types of jobs do they have? Are they doing starter properties, et cetera?
You know, with the,
and let's take the local part of it out of it as well. Who, yeah, are the first-time buyers?
I mean, I with the caveat that I haven't, you know, found that data anywhere that I can really speak to the full wide-scale data segment of it. I'd say the first-time home buyers are generally older than they were when I started practicing real estate 13 years ago. They're waiting, in my experience, they're waiting longer until they're more settled in life and they have more of their, they're at a later life stage where they may be, you know, engaged, or, you know, they're on their second job, maybe, or their third job. Because that first job's, you know, as most people, you know, experience, it's the first job that's not going to be your lifetime career. But I'd say the first-time home buyers are ones who have, you know, generally saved more, and they're more prepared for the trials of being a homeowner. You know, a lot of UVA people, a lot of nurses and doctors and medical residents, we're seeing that segment start to come back a little bit beyond where it was during the crash, correction, however you want to term it. But you're starting to see that, I wrote this story years ago, and I think it's still relevant, that the 0 to 5 buyers, you know, the ones who come in and they, you know, buy when they move to Charlottesville and then expect to sell it in 3 to 5 years and, you know, not lose money or even make money and trade up, I'd say that life cycle is pretty much gone. Now they're saying, okay, well, I'm going to move to Charlottesville and I'm going to rent for 3 to 4 years, get my bearings and get some savings and get my life under me. And then they go to buy. So I'd say that it's sort of been extended. But, you know, her question is extremely salient. I mean, the first-time home buyers, they're a, you know, core critical component of the real estate economy, that we depend on those people come in and they buy for, you know, that lower price point, and then a number of years they sell and they trade up. So it's, you know, unfortunately, it's yet to be determined where that segment really is. We'll know in a couple of years, you know, who the buyers were. But I'd say that the first-time home buyers are making that real estate life cycle a much longer one, which, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, when I started, you know, 13 years ago, my mom is still a practicing realtor. And, you know, the cycle of first-time home to your next home to your family home, your final home or what have you, was, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. And when during the boom years, it was, you know, you buy a house, you sell it in 2 years, you buy another house, you sell it in 2 years, and then you buy another house and you're done. And I think that is done. You're not going to buy a house and sell it in 2 years in our market, broadly speaking, and do anything other than lose money. So I think that people are now, they're buying for a 7 to 10 year window, and then they're looking at the next one, which, you know, I think that the metric that I've been looking for as we're moving through this is what is a stable number of transactions per year. I mean, at the peak of the market, it was, you know, it's from memory, it was like 4,800 transactions in Charlottesville, Albemarle, or actually in the MSA throughout the year. And then the depths of the recession, it was something like 1,500 or 1,600. So, you know, what's normal, it's somewhere in between. So I think that's really taking the first-time home buyers and adding it to that. I think that number of normal transactions is something we really need to track.
Are house landlords selling their homes? Somebody comes in and you talk about someone who is later in life looking to buy their home. Well, they have to live somewhere. Mm-hmm. And this is strictly a real guess, is that if you're later stage in life, you are probably not renting an apartment. You're renting a home of some sort, whatever size. Are those homes being purchased by the tenant? Or when you're ready to go, you just, you know, move on? There's still the same number of homes being rented as have always been.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, it's hard to answer that because we're still in the era of having accidental landlords, meaning that these people, you know, they bought in, we're in 2014 now, they bought in, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and they wanted to sell in 2 to 4 years, and then they just couldn't. They couldn't take that X thousands-dollar hit and be able to, you know, to survive. So you still have a fair amount of those homes that are out there that are underwater, and the homeowners, they want to sell, but they can't. So it's a challenging question. But I think that you see sometimes where the tenant will come to the owner and say, hey, we love this home. We don't want to leave. We're ready to buy. And I think that can be a nice transition for all parties.
Yeah, but the tenant often knows what the problems are in the house,
which makes them a good buyer. You know, honestly, if they know what the challenges are, if they know that there's a, you know, a rat infestation problem and they're willing to deal with it, or they know that the HVAC is inefficient and they're already budgeting to plan for that, that means that they can, you know, they will make an offer based on that. And it could work for the seller. And it's a, you know, it's a risk either way. The seller could say, you know what, perfect. Y'all know the house. You know, I think you're giving me a fair price, and maybe take that offer and move on. Because if you don't accept that and you move it to the open market, you may be able to get more for it, but also you might find somebody who's going to come in with higher expectations, expecting a near perfect home, and then you're going to get through the offer process and home inspection, et cetera, and, you know, end up with a much lower net return.
Jim Duncan from Nest Realty here today as we talk about what it's like to live in and make a community in the area. You can find his blog at realcentralva.com. If you want to give us a call and ask a question or make a comment about communities or realty, it's 434-979-0919. We walked in with some questions put forth by people on Jim's Facebook page. Jim, you wrote an article on triangles.
Yeah.
Explain triangles to listeners and why that's important.
Triangles are something that I think that everybody, well, I'll start with a story from years ago when I've coached, you know, my daughters in soccer for 14 years, something like that. And years ago, we still lived in Crozet, and I emailed the parents and I said, hey, you know, half of our games are going to be at the South Fork, you know, the soccer facility off Polo Grounds Road, and the other half are going to be at Baker Butler Elementary. And half the parents emailed me back and said, where's Baker Butler? And it really struck me because they had no reason to go anywhere other than their specific, relatively limited triangles. They lived in Crozet. They went to work. They went to school. And they went to the grocery store. And, you know, obviously stuff outside of there. But their main triangle points were work, home, school. And that's what I find that a lot of my clients are assessing and evaluating is, what is their triangle going to be? I've got some folks now I'm working with who are looking downtown. And their triangle is a very small geographical area because they want to be, you know, very, very close to the grocery store. They want to be very close to their work on downtown. They want to be very close to their home. And they're looking to
and they need a good school. I mean, that's really become a big issue for families.
Yeah.
It seems to be almost the, maybe not the first, but the second issue. It's like, I need to find this style home, but it needs to be in an area with good schools.
Right. No, I mean, it's something that I think that the public schools have become much more cognizant of the last few years.
So you've got 2 points of your triangle, or you've pretty much got all three set.
Yeah.
Your school and your work spot are filled, and so now you just need to find your home.
Right. And home is that thing that can shift a little bit. I mean, but if your school is here and your work is here, those are non-negotiable. And so, but you're also looking at where's that triangle going to be when they go from elementary to middle or middle to high? And you try to plan for the future as to making that triangle somewhat malleable, but also within a reasonable, you know, geographical and distance and time area.
Our guest today, Jim Duncan from Nest Realty, talking about community and real estate, how that all works together. You're welcome to call up and ask Jim a question, 434-979-0919.
Today's programming on WNRN is supported by
the Jefferson Theater, presenting Trombone Shorty in Orleans Avenue with special guest Sister Sparrow and the Dirty Birds on Thursday, September 11th. Tickets to see Trombone Shorty bring the sounds of Bourbon Street to Charlottesville on the 11th can be purchased at jeffersontheater.com. Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue, Thursday at the Jefferson Theater.
Gig Dog, putting live music at your fingertips by streaming bands with upcoming shows in your area. You can pick your location and favorite genres, and Gig Dog will bring you the bands coming to your town. It's gigdog.fm to discover new music online and find gigs right outside your door.
Commonwealth Reserve, Commonwealth Skybar's new private event space. From food and bar menus to floor plans, every detail is customizable. Commonwealth Reserve for business meetings, presentations, receptions, luncheons, and dinners. Commonwealth Reserve's event planner can tailor events from 20 to 100 guests. You can book your event at commonwealthreserve.com.
Hi, this is Sylvia Noyce, Exhibition and Program Manager at Riverview's Art Space in downtown Lynchburg. Riverview's 6th annual Juried Art Show is open to all Virginia-based artists working in any medium and any subject matter. Cash prizes will be given out at the discretion of the juror, Laura Roulette. Roulette is an active and widely published art historian and independent curator in the Washington, D.C. area, and has worked with museums and galleries nationally and internationally. Complete exhibition details and downloadable entry forms are available at riverviews.net. The deadline for entries is September 26. The 6th annual Juried Art Show will be on view at Riverview's Art Space from November 7th through December 14th. This is Sylvia Noyce, and I'm making community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for being here with us today on WNRN. Let me take a moment and tell you that WNRN and the Wake Up Call, looking for a producer for our program. If you have interest in the program, you're available to volunteer, 2 Sundays a month, and you have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. You can email us at volunteers@WNRN.org. We'd love to hear from you. All right, so back with our guest today. Jim Duncan. So, Jim, one of the things that you talked about is the urban versus suburban versus rural. Well, Charlottesville has sort of kicked up another notch on the urban list because we have one of those national groups joining us called Uber.
Oh, yeah.
Tell everybody what Uber is and why you think this just makes us more of a, or why I would think it makes us more of an urban area.
I've used Uber, in various big cities around the country, and it sometimes makes it a lot easier to get a cab, frankly.
And so what is it?
It's an app that says, if I can go to the app and say, I need someone to pick me up, and it allows people who are not necessarily, licensed yellow cab or big cab company taxi drivers to be an Uber driver, and they come pick you up and take you where you want to go. I like it because when you can say, I want to go from WNRN to the corner, which is really an easy bike ride, but it'll tell you an estimate of what the price is going to be. I had a friend who was telling me that he was thinking about taking an Uber to Lockin over the weekend, and the estimate was $74, which made it, he said, I think I might do that. I think it's just something that, it's kind of like, in a lot of ways, from an interaction capability, where the world was years ago with respect to Yelp and Foursquare and other big tech sites like that, that they became very prominent in big cities like San Francisco and New York and Chicago, et cetera. And the people coming from those cities to Charlottesville had that expectation of being able to use the same services that they use there and use them here. So I think it's just a flattening of the playing field, if you will, that makes Charlottesville and Albemarle by extension more of a big city location.
So here, go back to some of these questions that we received. This one comes from Betty. What are your thoughts on the impact of property values with the three proposed pipelines cutting through the state of Virginia? And so my question, sort of to expand this just a little bit on Betty's question, is this going to be similar to the Western Bypass? And the one that comes to mind is Squirrel Ridge, which is, for those of you who know, right there near Albemarle High School and the reservoir.
After every one of these shows, I put a story on my blog on Real Central VA that has some of the story notes and links for people to find out more. And this is one where I'm certainly going to have a lot more information, that because what they're planning to do is very significant, running a gas pipeline, I think it's West Virginia to North Carolina. And it's, I think it's going to be, I'm torn. I mean, I think that, yes, we need power. But I think, because as we in the country grows, we can't live without power. So there has to be a solution somehow that accomplishes, the consumer's demand for powering their iPhones and their microwaves and stuff like that. So with that preface, I think that it really needs to be, that needs to be a conversation piece, is how are we going to solve the power question? But as far as property values, I think it's something that, I saw one of the comments as I was researching this, that they're going to, Dominion's planning to come in and offer X amount of money for the right-of-way. I think it's 150-foot right-of-way for the construction, and then 75-foot right-of-way or easement ongoing for in perpetuity. They're going to come in and say, okay, we'll give you, I'm making this number up, $10,000 for this right-of-way, but that is for, the use of that right-of-way, that $10,000 is for the construction period, in essence. And it's not for the, 10 to 100 years of in perpetuity of them using that space. I think it's going to cause property values to decline, possibly. But I think it's also an unknown, at least from my perspective, because I haven't witnessed the impact over the years.
So that's why I ask about the Western Bypass. Here in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area, I would think that had an impact on homeowners, mm-hmm. where that was going by, and that you would have seen the issues involved with that.
Yeah, but I think the Western Bypass was different, at least in my opinion, in small part because the Dominion has the governor's office saying this pipeline has the full weight and support of the governor's office. So he's already come out, and that's been, that's something that I don't think the Western Bypass necessarily had. But the Western Bypass was also going to be highly visible, and it was going to have ongoing traffic and, you know, and noise and pollution and all that sort of thing that was going to impact people on a daily basis. And my understanding, again, my very limited understandings with the pipeline, it's going to be for a small part underground, which won't have as much of an immediate impact on people's perception, but it is going to diminish the property values in that they won't be able to use that anymore. And that, you know, 75-150 foot right of way will be, you know, undevelopable or ungardenable or unusable for what they want to do. So I think that that's something that it's something that will certainly, from a realtor's perspective, will need to be disclosed as far as what, you know, what is on this property, and that for some buyers they don't want to be close to that. I think a question that and I haven't read what the Southern Environmental Law Center has said about it, but a question that I would raise is, you know, being in kind of an idiot in this arena, you know, what's the risk of leaks? You know, what are they going to do to maintain it, to make sure it's, you know, double walled or triple walled or whatever, so that the risk is lower or lessened? You'll never be able to diminish it entirely. But what's the risk of having that pipeline on your property? And I think that's again, for me, that's an unknown.
So if you are living in Nelson County and you are considering, it just so happens that you are considering, you know, moving, selling your house, maybe expanding your home for one of these reasons that we've already talked about, your mother-in-law move in, your family aging, and so you need to move the master bedroom from the upper floor to the lower floor. How does that affect your thoughts? You go to Nest Realty and you end up talking to Jim Duncan, and granted, you've already admitted that it's not your area specialty in terms of the bypass, but do you say, don't build, move, don't sell, sell later?
I think it, you know, my advice is, a lot of what I do is I guide my clients to do their own research. Because ultimately, you know, I'm not the one who's making the decisions about whether they should build or move or what have you. I think that right now, you know, if they have the threat of that coming through, you know, now might not be the best time to sell, because, you know, as you saw with the Western Bypass, some of those properties that tried to sell had their property value, you know, immediately diminished because of the threat and the fear. Because I think that the threat and the fear of what it might come is far more, I won't say valuable, but it's more costly than what reality may be. So I think that if a buyer is looking to move to the area, I'm absolutely going to say, do your research. Here's where the pipeline is likely to go. And let's talk about what we discover about what may happen here. I know this. I did a bike ride yesterday through the valley, through Augusta and Waynesboro, and I saw a lot of no pipeline signs. And I've driven through Nelson, and there are a lot of no pipeline signs. So I think that the community, it seems, is getting, you know, very well organized to fight this thing. And I think they're starting to get more educated as to what the impact may be. And it looks like it's on a fast track. I mean, the stuff I was reading says that they want to be, you know, pumping gas in the next, I think, 3 years or four, 3.5 years. So I think that if the public is going to get educated on this and make an educated opinion, I think that, you know, now it's certainly a time to understand what's happening and do more than put signs in the yards if that's what they want to do.
By the way, if you're interested in a little more information on the bypass, the pipeline, you can go to WNRN.org or Seaville Podcast and find a previous show we did with Graylin Brashear talking about the work that Seaville Weekly has done in research about the pipeline. Again, Jim Duncan here, Nest Realty, Real Central VA. .com. You were talking about bicycling. Let's take this moment. Somebody had mentioned for you to plug the Boys and Girls Club Cycling Challenge. Take your 15 seconds.
This Sunday is the Boys and Girls Cycling Challenge, and it starts in Old Trail in Crozet, and it offers, I think, 25, 50, and 75, and 100-mile options, as well as a kids version, which selfishly I've opted to not do that because I want to ride 100 miles. But it's to support the Boys and Girls Club of Charlottesville, Albemarle area, and I will put up a link to that because they are trying to raise a significant amount of money for an extremely worthwhile organization that helps out a lot of the community.
Jim Duncan, Nest Realty, RealCentralVA.com. We're talking about community today, how that works through a real estate manner of being, meeting your neighbors, making new neighbors, deciding where to live, and what you want your neighbors to be.
I like this, Rick. I asked on Twitter for people to ask to help me with answering this question. How do you define and assess a community? And Mary says, those you feel in some way responsible for, to, and whose welfare feels tied up with your own. And Jane said, you know, very loosely, a group with shared interests or location or culture or history. I like those. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think that it's, in my experience, what I try and tell my clients to do, and what I try to do is, you know, smile to people, be aware of their well-being, help people out when you see them, help someone cross the street. And I think that that's one of the nice things about our area is that we have a really, in my experience, a strong community where people do look out for each other. And I think that it's something that, really does make our community a stronger area. And one of the reasons that people seek us out is because we do have a reputation for being, useful and helpful for our neighbors.
Well, good points from Mary and Jane. Thank you very much. Jim Duncan, Ness Realty. What's your Twitter account?
Jim Duncan. Go on.
It's interesting that, realcentralva.com, you were dependent on what was left to choose from as domain names, but obviously with Twitter account names, you were in early on that.
I do make an effort to, with any new social media thing that comes out, to get Jim Duncan early on. I had Jim Duncan before the weatherman in Richmond had Jim Duncan, so I'm awfully proud of that.
Oh, I had somebody when they were saying, who's your guest today? I said, Jim Duncan. They're like, the weather guy?
Exactly. It's been taking me years to get around that.
Again, Jim Duncan, Ness Realty, realcentralva.com. As we're talking about community and a little bit about realty. So here's a question from Kim. How do sellers determine realistic pricing? And I assume by realistic, I came up with a fair dollar for themselves, but also within a 90-day time period.
I think that there are two answers there. Realistic is what for the price for which they can afford to sell, which they can either pay the mortgage and the fees associated with selling. I think that's one definition of realistic. And I think the other definition of realistic is what the market value is. And market value, may be, $300,000, and realistic market value for them may be $350,000. So I think it really does depend on what that is. And what I try to do with my clients is counsel them as to what the market reality is, being fully cognizant of what, they might owe $350,000, but the market value might be $325,000. And we look at the competition, we look at what's sold, and we look at what this stuff is. Because ultimately, and it's hard to say this without sounding callous, but what you as a seller need or want to make is completely irrelevant with respect to what the market determines the value of your home may be. So it's a balancing act often of what can we try to sell it for and walk away and not lose everything. I think we're still, in some segments of our market, we're still having that conversation, because I've seen numbers nationally saying that 30-40% of some homeowners are still underwater. So I think that, what's realistic, it really does depend. I looked at some numbers quickly coming in here, that of the homes that sold in the MSA, which is Charlotte, Alabama, Flavanna, Louisa, Flavanna, and Nelson, between 1st of June and 1st of September, there were 941 homes sold. 403 of those had continuous days on market, which is the time it was on the market, of under 30 days. So, almost half, had determined that realistic was something that they could afford to do. So it really does depend on, what the market says and what the goals of the sellers are. And ultimately, a good professional full-time realtor is going to help them determine what the market may determine the value to be. But ultimately it's up to the seller to say, okay, that sounds reasonable, or I just can't do that. That's not something that I'm in a financial ability to do. Or you might be saying, I bought it for, 200 10 years ago, and it's worth 325 now. Do I want to sell it fast at 315, or do I want to try to make a little bit more and put it on at 335, or whatever those numbers are? But ultimately, I think it warrants a detailed and serious conversation about what the market is for that little micro segment of home which is going to be different than a condo at Walker Square. It's going to be different from a home in Old Trail. It's going to be different than a home on in Dunlora.
Here's a question that we got from Gary in Charlottesville. He says, good fences make better neighbors. And then would like you to talk about privacy versus suburbanization. Can you be private in a suburban neighborhood? Can you be private? Can you have privacy in Dunlora? Can you have privacy in one of those new neighborhoods in the Crozet area?
I think so. I mean, I think that it's up to how you handle yourself.
Because those are suburbanized, yeah. I would, in my mind anyway. I don't know if Gary qualifies it as that.
No, I'd say that they certainly are. I mean, I think good fences make good neighbors is absolutely a well said and timeless statement of how it is, what it's like to live in a neighborhood or even, a farm. But I think that I think that you have the opportunity to be as private as you want to be in most of the neighborhoods in Charlottesville area. I think that I'd say that there may be more of a potential stigmatizing opportunity if you live in some row homes and you never wave to your neighbors or never say hi to them. But I'd also say that, one of the stories I'll put up later was, most people don't know the names of their neighbors. The one study said that, half of Americans don't know their next door neighbors' names. So I think it's there's privacy and then there's, disinterest. And I think that you can opt to live a more private life. But I think that looking back to one of my clients years ago, he said he wanted to live in a fairly close-in location, but he wanted to have the privacy to walk around in his boxers in his backyard.
All right. Now, that's what I like.
And that is hard to find. I mean, that's hard to find in a suburban location. That's going to be very location-specific. There's some areas I can think about, but it's not something you're going to say, okay, I'm going to move to Forest Lakes and have that, just by default. I think that you're going to have to find the right house in the right location with the right, mature tree section to have that ability to walk around in your boxers in the middle of the day.
Is that so the trees are mature enough to not stare?
A little bit.
Is that what you mean by
that? A little
bit
of both.
11:54 here on the Wake Up Call. Jim Duncan, Nest Realty, as we talk about communities, privacy. Thanks, Gary. And find his blog at realcentralva.com. Here's a question that came in from Hawes. Your thoughts on the impact of bringing to market so many high-end apartment complexes in Charlottesville over the last decade, most recently the flats at West Village for the students and City Walk for the yuppies. So high-end apartment complexes in Charlottesville.
Man, there's a lot of them. I think it depends. I mean, we'll know in 18 to 24 months what that impact is, on both the competing apartment complexes. I mean, you've got the ones on Millmont, which are near
the law school.
And you've got those. You have City Walk downtown. You have the flats of West Village. You have another one coming to West Main. I think another two coming to West Main. Stonefield has a bunch of apartments in there. I've written stories about this, but I mean, there's several thousand new apartment units coming to the market. I think it's a multifaceted answer. I mean, one, aesthetically, is that something that we want to have, in our community, and how are we going to define that? But also, what's the impact going to be on infrastructure? I mean, to pick on the flats at West Village, are all those people living there going to be, driving, walking, biking,
flushing at the same time?
Flushing at the same time. Remember when John Paul Jones, when the arena was being tested, they had one time when thousands of people went in and flushed all the toilets one time. I think it's, the roads, the plumbing, the sewers, the internet, power. I mean, I think all that's going to be something that I'm not sure has been, and probably it may have been taken into account when approving all of these. But I think that, from a real estate perspective, purely at the valuation, I think it's something that we may see that carryover effect that, student condos and student apartments older homes in the city that have been, rented may be converted back to single family, which I think would be very good for the buying population.
Why do you say that?
Because people want to live, you know, a lot of people want to live in single family homes downtown or near.
Does this go back to our earlier conversation about families moving closer to the urban ring?
Absolutely. You know, I think it, you know, that'll give an opportunity for people who don't want to have two cars or any cars, the chance to live downtown.
So Charlottesville's Venable neighborhood, for example, which is loaded with university students, some of those homes, because the university students can move into these new apartments or other new living areas.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Those homes.
I mean, there are a lot of people. I know one person who's done the math of living downtown, that taking a taxi or an Uber to the grocery store once a week is, you know, a more economical alternative to owning a car or two. So I think these apartments are going to have an impact on our market, and it's going to be short and long term as far as what the rents in those places are going to be. Are they going to keep going up? Are they going to offer, you know, deals to get people in? I think the quality of construction is, you know, hopefully it's really good, but that's something else we're going to know and know better in 18 to 36 months. I think it's really an interesting time. I mean, West Main today is going to look vastly different in 2 years than it did 2 years ago.
What's going up that makes you say that?
The hotel on the corner. That is, it seems to be slowly coming along, but every day I go by there, or every other day, there's something else happening.
Does Richmond or Harrisonburg or Waynesboro, other listening areas, larger city listening areas, are they experiencing similar issues where people are moving closer to the area because the family is aging or because they don't want to have the car?
I don't know those markets intimately, but I have read stories about nationwide trends about people, and I could only attribute it to, you know, say that it's probably going to carry over there as well, that people are moving to be closer to the urban centers, that they do want to be close to things that make their lives, you know, for their definitions, better. And, you know, one thing interesting, Rick, is that, you know, a lot of people need broadband internet. You know, I'd say most of my clients need broadband. And that's a limiting factor for people in Albemarle County, is that it's, you know, a lot of my guys coming from out of area are shocked that every part of Albemarle County doesn't have, you know, high-speed wired internet. And, you know, that's one of the things that is driving people closer in, because you go out, you know, beyond Batesville or, you know, beyond Western Albemarle High School even a little ways, you're not getting internet unless it's satellite or line of sight. So I think that, you know, that's something that is driving people closer in, is because they need fiber, they need, you know, high speed, and they can't get that in the rural areas. So that's another conversation piece that's going to be ongoing for some time.
All right, you're finishing up here. Your next article on Central VA?
It's going to be a takeoff from this, with links to stories that we've talked about today, but also expanding. I think probably expanding quite a bit on the community aspect, because I've gotten some interesting responses on Facebook and Twitter to that question.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Rick. Really appreciate it.
And thanks to those who sent your questions in. Next week, we will be having University of Virginia Professor Bill Johnson from the Economics Department discussing minimum wage. And just a few seconds, I had a lot of folks who were surprised that I hadn't mentioned this, some friends and family, since I always talk about Lazarus on air. Lazarus passed away. So, see you next week.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by The Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong and Max Cecilia Struther. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.